You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I was in San Francisco all this week, hosting the opening of the annual Hump Tour. Hump, of course, is my little sex and body and diversity and perversity positive porn film festival, and it's on tour now. Go to humpfilmfest.com to find out when Hump is coming to a city near you. Anyway, I hadn't watched the full program since Hump, in its 13th annual outing, premiered 3 months ago in Seattle. But on Saturday night, I sat with some friends in the balcony of San Francisco's historic Victoria Theater and watched the whole show. And I was immediately struck by something that hadn't really registered back when we were putting this year's festival together. Again and again, in film after film, I saw people, men and women, queer and straight, cis and trans, put two or three fingers into the mouths of their sex partners and feel their tongues, I guess? It's obviously a power move, a dominance display, one way to seize control of someone else's orifice, hopefully in a way that they enjoy and find sexy. But I sat there in the theater thinking, oh my God, it's the claw over and over again. The claw is the name Grace, and I'm assuming everyone knows who Grace is by now, gave to a move Aziz Ansari pulled on her over and over again by her account in his apartment after a date that left her feeling victimized. You've either read the piece that ran at babe.net under the headline, I went on a date with Aziz Ansari, it turned into the worst night of my life, or you've read about it. I'm not going to dissect the piece or that particular evening in Ansari's apartment or re-dissect them or re-dissect them. But after a meal, Ansari took Grace back to his apartment and repeatedly attempted to initiate sex of some form, sexual intercourse, oral sex. And according to Grace, Ansari failed again and again and again to pick up on her nonverbal cues. He failed to notice how uncomfortable she was, and he kept going. He kept making advances. People have been taking sides, for and against Grace, for and against disease. And I found myself in this weird position of agreeing with a lot of people on both sides of this debate. I found myself agreeing with much of what Barry Weiss wrote at the New York Times. Barry Weiss described the date as bad sex. Here's a quote. Aziz Ansari sounds as if he were aggressive and selfish and obnoxious that night. Isn't it heartbreaking and depressing that men, especially ones who present themselves publicly as feminists, so often act this way in private? And isn't it enraging that women are socialized to be docile and accommodating and put men's desires before their own? Yes, yes, and yes. But the solution to these problems does not begin with women torching men for failing to understand their nonverbal cues. It is for women to be more verbal. It's to say, this is what turns me on. It's to say, I don't want to do that. And yes, sometimes it means saying goodbye. I also found myself agreeing with and furiously retweeting what Lauren Duncan had to say. Do you know how many women have had to fake periods or drunkenness to weasel out of a sexual encounter without setting off a male rage spiral? Just saying no is not always an option. That's the whole fucking problem. I'm with Duncan. This is the problem. Male rage, male violence, and women's fear of it. As I wrote in response to a clueless male Savage Love reader a couple of months ago, a man's intent when initiating sex can feel non-threatening. He can be ready to hear that no and respect it, but the woman he's attempting to initiate sex with, she can experience it very differently. Because men don't move through their lives deflecting near constant unwanted sexual attention. We aren't subjected to epidemic levels of sexual violence, and consequently we don't live with the daily fear that we could be the victims of sexual violence at any time and in any place. Women do. So there is often a huge disconnect between what a man thinks he's doing and how a woman experiences what that man is doing, because her perceptions are shaped by the experience and fear of sexual violence. Some men are aware of these facts, and that awareness informs their approach in a positive way. They've worked out how to initiate sex with a woman in a way that where she feels safe and empowered to say no out loud. Some men are aware of these dynamics and intentionally and maliciously exploit them to get what they want. They intimidate and pressure. The rest, perhaps most men, they're just oblivious to it. And that is the whole fucking problem. Men who are clueless, as Aziz Ansari appears to have been, if we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and men who are consciously or subconsciously exploiting women's fears of sexual violence And you know what? The clueless and the exploiters, that may add up to most men. Hashtag not all men, but most men. So while I liked and gave a signal boost here on the podcast to something that Laura Kipnis wrote last year in the New York Times Review of Books, quote, if we're demanding that men overcome their gender socialization, are there aspects of femininity we might wish to ditch too? We have to, all throughout these conversations, take into account the fear of violence. So many women have had bad sexual experiences with men who didn't realize they were doing anything wrong. They were guilty of misreading cues or being blind to them, or maybe more accurate to say blinded to them. Because this socialization system, the way men are socialized, the way women are socialized, it's not a system that works well for anyone, for men or women. Because you know what? I don't think Aziz wanted to hurt or scare or traumatize Grace that night. Does anyone? But she was hurt and she was scared and apparently she was traumatized. And it's not enough to say, why didn't she advocate for herself in the moment? We should say that. I say that to women all the time on this show. But we also have to ask, why don't women feel like they can advocate for themselves in the moment and say no and get up and leave? And the answer, again, is violence, fear, terror. The ways in which men and women are socialized, it's not good for women. It's also not good for men. It is a system of oppression, as they say, that sets women up to be victimized and sets men up to be victimizers. Some men are fine with that and fuck those guys, but some men, many men, are horrified when they learn too late that they have victimized someone. We can and we must do better, all of us. All right, coming up on today's show, I chat with Sarah Silverman about her wonderful new show, I Love You, America. And Sarah sat in and took some of your calls and offers up some sex advice. All of that coming up on the Magnum and the Micro Savage Lovecast. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Aptiv. Aptiv produces audio-based fitness workouts, programs, and challenges created by certified expert personal trainers available online and through their mobile app so you can work out just the way you like. New members get 50% off an annual membership plan featuring unlimited workouts. Visit aptiv.com/savage and the discount will be automatically applied during checkout. That's aaptiv.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by Movement Watches. Good-looking watches, bracelets, sunglasses, and gifts at great prices. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/savage. The Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper, mattresses made by humans for humans. Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/savage and using the promo code SAVAGE at checkout.
Hi Dan, 24-year-old bi female here calling from Brisbane, Australia. I'm calling with a question about my responsibility in educating my sexual partners. So recently I've had two casual sex partners who have, during sex, put their hands around my throat. And while I actually really like that, I hadn't given them much indication that I would like that beforehand. So my most recent sex partner who did that, I broached the topic with him after sex and I said that he was lucky that I liked the choking. And he said, yeah, most girls do and they don't know they like it until they try it. And I suggested using dirty talk beforehand as a way of gaining consent before he does something like that. He defended himself by saying he thought I would probably like it because I had said that I liked my nipples being squeezed harder, and also that he only put his hand softly on my throat, which was true. But I replied saying that, well, one day he might come into trouble with a girl who has some trauma that he doesn't know about. And he said, yeah, I probably will. So my attempt at future-proofing this sexual partner for future girls did not turn out as I wanted, I don't think, because it seems like he will continue doing this. So I guess my question to you is it my responsibility to be educating my sexual partners for future women who encounter them, and how can I go about this so that they might be more receptive to my advice?
It is absolutely your responsibility to educate your partners for the future women that they may find themselves in bed with. I love that turn of phrase, future-proofing. That's kind of genius, and consider it stolen. I'm going to use that a lot. We've talked about future-proofing in reference to not faking orgasms. There's a lot of guys out there who think that their dicks are magic and they induce orgasms in women 100% of the time because each and every one of the women that they've been with could come from vaginal penetration alone. When the research shows and the data shows, and women, when they're honest, will tell you that only 25% of women can come from vaginal penetration alone. But women feel under tremendous pressure to come. Guys react like there's something damaged about women who can't come from vaginal penetration or vaginal intercourse alone. So they fake it, and it leaves guys with this mistaken impression of their magic dick stick and all that it's capable of. And then that guy finds himself in bed with the woman who's honest with him for the first time, and he reacts in horror and shames her, and it's ugly. So yeah, future-proofing, I endorse it, not just in reference to vaginal intercourse and the magic properties of dick sticks, but in all regards, we should all be leaving each other in better shape than we found each other. I call that the campsite rule. Usually we're talking about older or more experienced partners with younger or less experienced partners. And I think it's a responsibility of the older and or more experienced partner to leave the younger and or less experienced partner in better shape than they found them. We should all leave each other, hopefully, in better shape than we found each other. That said, in reference to your particular circumstance and this particular guy, sounds like he read you accurately. Sounds like he was gentle when he put his hand near your throat and was prepared to continue to read your signals. I think people should err on the side of gaining explicit verbal consent before they bust out some varsity level kink move. And choking qualifies. Choking is also regarded by many people in the BDSM scene and many responsible kinksters as too inherently dangerous to engage in. A lot of people do it. A lot of people enjoy it. They haven't died yet, and they think that they can't be harmed by it. But I kind of side with the pros here, the Mistress Matisse's and the Jay Wisemans, who tell us that choking is risky and it can go south in an instant and that people indeed have died. So I don't recommend that people choke, even with consent. I don't recommend that people gently wrap their hands around each other's throats to see if choking is something that someone might enjoy. But that is what this guy did here, and you do enjoy it, and he read you accurately. And we have to sit back and say, well, is that because he's so skilled, or does he do this to everybody? And with you, it was something that you enjoyed, and he got lucky. And in the past or in the future, he may do it with someone who's traumatized by it, who doesn't enjoy it, and he may get unlucky. And I think that's probable based on his fucking blasé reaction when you warned him that some women, some of the sex partners he may encounter in the future, are likely to have experienced sexual trauma, and some of them may have been grabbed by the throat when they were violated or raped, and this could be tremendously triggering. And that he reacted without really seeming to give a shit about that potentiality. Ugh, he's no one I would sleep with ever again. He's someone that I would warn my friends not to sleep with if he were fucking his way through my social circle. But hopefully you planted a seed. And he's going to think about that. Even if he reacted defensively in the moment, that doesn't mean he's not ruminating on what you said to him. Sometimes we don't get the reaction we want out of people immediately when we tell them something that they need to know, but they sit with it, it rattles around in their head, and eventually they come the fuck around. So I'm glad you said what you said. I'm glad you made a good faith effort to future-proof this guy. But unfortunately, there's no magic word. There's no incantation you can mutter before you tell someone something that they need to know that's going to guarantee that they take it to heart. But you did what you could to protect this guy's future partners from his assholery and blasé attitude toward their comfort and safety. Good for you.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 23-year-old woman calling from the Midwest. I had a question about ending a relationship through texting. Surprisingly, last week I was broken up through a text. It was heartbreaking and embarrassing, and I was obviously pissed off at the guy that did that. But after I got over my hurt feelings, I talked to him and I asked him why he chose that method to break up with me. And after him explaining it to me, I kind of understood what he was saying. So he basically said in a nutshell that he did this so he could put everything out there without and saying anything stupid or me getting frustrated or angry. He just needed to put everything out there and then we could discuss it later, which is what he stated in the actual text message. However, I did not receive this very well. I was angry and, you know, I felt like I deserved more than that. Our relationship was very caring and, you know, there was a lot of respect between us, and I felt like that was just inappropriate for him to end such a relationship in that way. A little background, we had only been dating for about 4 months, if that, and I think we're going to continue to be maybe friends with benefits, which is perfectly fine for me at the moment. I just started 2 new jobs. I just graduated from college. Just wondered if you ever thought that it's okay to break up with someone through a text message. Is that just straight up tacky, or is there ever going to be an occasion where that's okay?
The epidemic of ghosting, of course, ghosting is people just disappearing on you, no longer returning your text messages, no longer taking your calls, just poof, absencing themselves from your lives. The epidemic of ghosting makes sending a text to officially and formally end things seem positively considerate and kind. There's some closure. People who get ghosted wonder what the fuck happened, where the fuck that person went, why they disappeared. And in the wake or context of this epidemic of ghosting, we may have to reassess our attitude towards a clean and clear text breakup. I'm old enough to remember when people complained about being broken up with over the phone, that it wasn't something you should do on the telephone, that you should have the decency, the courtesy, the courage, the OVA to do it in person, face to face. And then that became don't do it by text. And now don't just disappear seems to be the emerging standard. Say something somehow. Snap me, DM me on Instagram, send me a text, something. Let me know it's over if it's over, instead of leaving me to wonder if you were abducted or the rapture came and you were the only decent Christian on the planet. There are, though, a couple of valid reasons for someone to break up via text or even ghost. Sometimes people have a hard time dumping someone because the person they're trying to dump is abusive or manipulative. I am not saying you, caller, are abusive or manipulative, but sometimes people do it by text or just disappear because the person they want to break up with is intimidating and will not allow them to break up with them, argue them into a corner, refuse to consent to the breakup, which is bullshit. Breakups are the only aspect of human relationships, of sexual and romantic relationships, where consent is irrelevant. And the intimidated partner may find it impossible to extricate themselves from the relationship face-to-face or on the phone or even via text, and just disappearing or sending one last text and then blocking numbers is, in their eyes, the only way out without being sucked into a conversation or an argument that they feel like they're going to lose with someone who's emotionally manipulative or controlling or scary or violent. That doesn't sound like what's going on here. And the reason the guy who dumped you after 3 or 4 months, and 3 or 4 months ain't a marriage, the reason he cites that he gets flustered, that it helped him organize his thoughts and say what he intended to say, I think you have to regard that as valid too. Some people have a difficult time discussing sex, romance, relationships, emotional issues, and have an easier time writing about it than talking about it, especially if it's fraught, especially if they want to make sure that they're saying it in the kindest way possible, and that the wrong turn of phrase doesn't tumble out of their mouth and cause you additional and unnecessary and avoidable pain. But besides those two reasons, I get flustered or I am afraid of you, I do think texting isn't as good as calling, and calling isn't as good as face-to-facing. But in the ghosting era, in our current ghost world, at least he let you know. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Aptiv. Aptiv produces audio-based workouts, programs, and challenges created by certified personal trainers, available through a mobile app so you can work out just the way you like. They offer a huge variety of expert trainers to guide you through your workout, and you can choose the personality you like best. And they offer great music playlists perfectly timed to the intensity and pace of the selected workout. Whenever and wherever you like to work out, at the gym, at home, outside, when you're traveling for business, Aptiv is ready to go along with you with their mobile app. It's like having a personal trainer in your pocket, which is just where we like them. Aptiv has classes for all fitness levels, from beginners to intermediate to advanced, and with more than 2,500 workouts available on the platform and 30-plus new classes added each week, there's always a new workout for you to try. You will never, ever have to be bored by your routine at the gym again, or simply pick up the type of guidance you are feeling up for that day. Whether it's a calming long-distance run, crazy high-energy coaching, or boot camp-style intensity. And they offer special features like a full maternity program, marathon training programs, and more. Subscriptions start at $9.99 billed monthly, or $99.99 for a full-year membership plan. For a limited time, new members get 50% off an annual membership plan, which is just $49.99 for the whole year. Visit aptiv.com/savage and the discount will be automatically applied during checkout. That's aaptiv.com/savage.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy at Risk Youth. I'm in my late 20s living with my boyfriend on the East Coast. We live in a small apartment and I'm always looking for ways to save space by buying wall storage and other space savers. The tightness and the clutter of the apartment apparently doesn't bother my boyfriend, so we agreed that if I wanted to make purchases that I think are necessary to improve the apartment, that I would be paying for it. So after a few purchases and making some changes, not only am I happy, but my partner is also really happy with the changes and acknowledges that they were needed. For background info, we both have steady incomes and contribute equally to our living expenses. I'm not going to ask for money for the changes I made since we already had an agreement, but is it fair to get him involved in the future home improvements that he does not think are necessary at first, but then sees after that they do in fact improve our living space? I don't think these will ever be a financial priority for him, but in the end, these are changes that benefit the both of us.
Is he nickel and diming you on every expense? If he has to pick something up that's for the both of you, does he present you with an itemized bill down to the penny and insists on splitting everything that he lays money out in advance on equally? If yes, then yeah, you should insist that he pay you equally, that these expenses that benefit you both in your shared living space are equally shared. But, you know, if he's got the car and you don't have a car and he's putting gas in the car and there are things that he spends money on that aren't necessarily about your shared living space, but that you benefit from as well. If when you go out to eat, he always or regularly or mostly picks up the checks out of force of gendered habit. If you have a pet and he's the one who usually has to run it to the vet for whatever and he picks up the bill and doesn't think to or ask you to pay half or wouldn't. If when you guys go out for a club or you go out drinking, he tends to be the one who gets the rounds. Ask yourself, does it even out? Is it roughly fair? Because nickel and diming, the person that you live with, the person that you love, is exhausting. It can create needless, avoidable conflict. When you look at your relationship, you have to look at the big picture. You can look at one thing in the room or one thing about your relationship and think, yeah, I did that. I want some credit or I want half the money that that cost. But if you look around the room, what else is in the room? What else is in your relationship? What else do you guys do? Is it roughly fair? If so, don't nickel and dime each other. Relationships generate conflict on their own. Life is drama and chaos. You don't have to generate it. Valentine's Day is coming up, and if you're a regular listener, you are familiar with my single most important piece of Valentine's Day advice, which I'm not going to get into right now, but it also couldn't hurt to get your loved one or loved ones a special gift. And here it is. Get them a Movement watch. My husband is wearing one right now. Movement Watches was founded on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. The watchmaker's goal is to change the way consumers think about fashion by offering high-quality minimalist products at revolutionary prices. With over 1 million watches sold to customers in 160-plus countries around the world, Movement Watches has solidified itself as the world's fastest-growing watch company. Movement and their stylists have curated an interactive gift guide to make Valentine's Day shopping painless. You can find the perfect gift for the man, woman, or non-binary in your life. You'll find watches, bracelets, and sunglasses and any combination of these gifts in a limited edition gift box. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/savage. Once again, Movement Watches, mvmt.com/savage. Join the movement.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 25-year-old from Canada, heterosexual, cisgendered, and I have a question about online dating etiquette. So I've been talking with this guy for about a week or a week and a half now on FetLife, and he's a Dom, and I'm a sub, and I was really excited about our conversation, We seem to have overlapping kinks, but he also isn't pushing like anything too sexual. It seems like he's really just trying to get to know me. Recently, he disclosed that he's not as experienced of a dom, and I think that's kind of a turnoff for me. So that was the first thing. But then recently, he also told me that he's 5'6". Now, I'm not like a size queen or anything like that, and I feel really awful for calling and saying, oh, I'm not interested because of his size. But when you think about this, like his size plus the, you know, his inexperience as a dom, it's like maybe I won't get from this guy, you know, what it is that I'm interested in. And I'm not looking for a relationship. It really was a one-night stand. But I'm wondering, I really don't need your permission to cut things off, but what I am wondering is, how do I do that nicely? Do I tell him I'm just not interested in talking anymore? I don't want to just ghost him. I don't think that's a very nice thing to do.
He gave you really two outs here. You were looking for and hoping to play with somebody who was more experienced. You're a newbie. He's a newbie. Now, there are certainly people out there in BDSM land who come together who are both inexperienced, and they explore together, they learn together, they grow together. But if what you wanted for your first dive into the deep end of the pool was someone more experienced, that's a valid reason to tell him, hey, the more we've gotten to know each other, the less comfortable I am playing. Let's be friends. Let's stay in touch and chit-chat about our journeys, but I'm looking for a more experienced dom. The other reason he gave you is about his physical appearance, and all you have to do to figure out whether you should cite that is ask yourself, how would you feel if he told you, you're too short, you're too fat, your tits are too big, your tits are too small, your labia is too enormous, like anything. If he cited your physical appearance, you would be wounded, and wounded by the unnecessary, thoughtless cruelty of it, because you had another out, which was the experience issue. So you can sidestep the height thing. I will say, though, in BDSM land, maybe you're going to meet a super experienced dom who gets your juices flowing, and then he's going to tell you he's 5'4". A lot of BDSM play is about what goes on between your ears. It's also about a skill set that has nothing to do with physical appearance. Someone can be really great at shibari-style bondage, if you're interested in shibari-style bondage, and not be your ideal physical type, even not be the gender that you're particularly attracted to, but the activity itself is a pleasure that you might enjoy, irrespective of their physical appearance. So one of the things you'll see if you get into BDSM land, if you become a part of kink culture and the kink scene, are people playing often at play parties with people that they aren't necessarily intimate with, that they aren't having intercourse with, that they aren't partnered with, that couldn't be their partners because they're not the right gender, sexual orientation, or something else. There is a lot of cross everything play going on because it's about the skill sets and not about the genitals coming together at the end. Also, as a friend of mine once said to someone who complained about the guy who was pursuing him, who was short and a dom top, how tall are you when you're on your knees? Casper is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Casper's mattresses are designed by humans for humans. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Casper's breathable design helps you sleep cool, which is how I like to sleep, and regulate your body temperature throughout the night. They are not just a mattress company, though. Casper offers a wide array of products to ensure an overall better sleep experience, and Casper's mattresses are made in the USA. Buying a Casper mattress is easy. You order online, it's delivered to your door in a compact box, and they offer free shipping and free returns to the US and Canada. Considering we spend one-third of our lives on a mattress, it's so important to truly sleep on a mattress before committing. That's why Casper gives you 100 nights to try it out. Terry and I love our Casper mattress. We sleep on it and other stuff on it, and we liked it so much we got another one for the guest room. Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/savage and using promo code SAVAGE at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. That's $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/savage and using the promo code SAVAGE at checkout.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 40-year-old woman, married for 12 years, 3 children. One is big, 2 are little. And my question is related to my youngest son. He's 4. Both my husband and I are very open, comfortable with sex. learning how to support our kids for sure, because we weren't taught to be comfortable and open sexually. And so we're, yeah, trying to do the best that we can. We're very comfortable with them exploring themselves and just try to offer, like, you know, to go to your rooms or to have some private space or private time to explore their vagina or their penis. And we're very comfortable with this. My question is related to my son. He's really into exploring his bum and his anus, and he wants to, like, put things in there. And in general, I'm comfortable with that as an adult. My husband and I are both comfortable with this, but I'm unsure about when it's appropriate for children to be exploring, inserting objects, I guess, you know, into themselves. I don't want to give him phobias or, like, fears and freaking out about it, but I also, it feels a bit weird, and I'm not really sure how to coach this.
Joining me by phone to help tackle this question, because why the hell not, is Sarah Silverman, actor, comedian, and host of I Love You, America, a terrific new late night show on Hulu, where Silverman spends a lot of time meeting up with and talking to people who may not agree with her on social or political issues, because someone has to do it. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you? Howdy.
I'm really good. You know, before we get to this burning question, there's something I have to ask you about. You recently did a thing that got a lot of attention. You were nice to a stranger on the internet, a troll who said a shitty thing to you. Guy called you a...
It was just simply one word, cunt. But it's, I don't know, it's heartbreaking to me that this has made such news. I mean, it's good because I guess we need this right
It's not news that some guy on the internet called some woman he has never met and doesn't know a cunt. What's news is how you responded. And you responded by looking through his timeline. You didn't just blow up back at him. You didn't, retweet it with a comment and your followers all piled on. You looked back through his own Twitter feed and found that he was not working, in a great deal of pain, broke, couldn't afford medical care. And you rallied your followers and then paid for yourself the medical care that this guy who called you a cunt needed. That's remarkable.
Well, that's not exactly it.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's what I keeps being reported. But what happened was I looked at his timeline, and it was all rage, all just trying to get kicked off of Twitter, and I see that as just wanting to be seen, you know? I mean, I see that in hecklers, I see that on the internet and stuff. So I knew it was something, it wasn't personal to me that he said it. He's doing this however he could, just saying the worst thing he can say and just saying, kick me off Twitter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then one of them talked about his back pain. So I just said, you know, you're clearly in a lot of pain, and, you know, you deserve support, because my therapist says, we don't get what we want. We get what we think we deserve. And I see this so much played out, you know, in so many ways. And that's when he just from one kind tweet that saw him, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He was able to just be vulnerable and, like, be his true self. And he's a good guy, you know. He has a lot of ailments. He doesn't have insurance. He's having a hard time, you know. And I haven't paid for anything yet, because he needs to get a diagnosis and all this stuff, you know. So I feel guilty that there's headlines saying, like, and she paid all his medical bills, you know, but I'm willing to, once there's some diagnosis and some process. But I'm not just sending him money, because I am concerned about, I want to just pay doctors directly, you know, like, but, so we aren't even there yet. But,
people have lied on the internet.
Well, it's not that I don't trust him, but I know that he's looking for pain management, and, you know, we're in the middle of an opioid crisis, and it's got to be more than that. He's got to put the work in, and he knows that, you know. But we're on constant direct methods, and he's a good guy, you know. But
he's your friend Jeremy now, you call him
Jeremy Jamrosi. And I learned all of this, I had great teachers, and am I talking too long? I don't know. But
no, please.
On my show, I learned so much each time, you know. From Christian Piccolini, who was a Nazi, you know, a skinhead, and and changed because somebody treated him with compassion. And he said on the show, you know, find someone who doesn't deserve your compassion and give it to them. And I'm not saying Jeremy didn't deserve my compassion. He does. But that was what Christian was saying. You know, it's like, that's how he changed, you know, and same with Megan Phelps Roper, who is so brilliant and amazing and grew up in the Westboro Baptist Church and just believed it with her whole heart, you know, but she's still that same person.
I follow you on Twitter, and I've seen you recently ask Sheriff David Clark, that odious person from Milwaukee, are you okay? And I've also seen you send encouraging words to Donald Trump. You've told him it's not too late. He can change and grow, be a better person. Is it on us? We have to be nicer to them, even him, to bring them around? You know, I hear what you're saying.
We don't have to, but we can. You know, like it's like wanting to be an ally to the Black community, you know, and how can we do that? You know, well, it's not up to, you know, a Black woman to tell me how best to be an ally, but she could, you know, and I see it that way with myself, you know, that it's okay. Listen, we've tried arguing, and I'm not saying I'm not going to be snarky online or say cunty things. You know, I'm not a perfect person. I'm trying. I'm practicing a new thing right now, you know, because I'm trying to.
You're not saying lefties and the left has to be on its best behavior at all times to bring around people on the right.
No,
who may all be in pain. But you are encouraging people to do kind of what I read John Ronson's book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed. It really changed how I functioned on Twitter and the internet. Because there's that line he writes where, you know, everybody piles on to someone. And if you had retweeted and added your now friend Jeremy when he called you the C word out of the blue for no reason, there would have been a pile on.
Oh, he would have been murdered.
Right. There would have been this pile on. And that's what Ronson calls it, an avalanche. People just get buried. And he said in the book, and it really stuck with me, a single snowflake doesn't feel responsible for the avalanche. And I thought back over time on Twitter where I was one of those goddamn snowflakes. And I don't do it anymore. Even when I see someone getting piled on because they deserve it, I don't do it anymore. But it was a stretch for me to think I should, you know, because I get grief from people too. I get a lot of homophobes and people in my ads and mentions going after me for bullshit. And, you know, sometimes I will look, but I never say anything kind. I just like leave them alone. I don't jump on them. And, you know, reading about what you did with Jeremy is making me thinking maybe I need to be nicer to these people who I think are drilling holes in the bottom of our ship of state and sinking our democracy.
I have tried kindness towards Trump or whatever, but you know, who knows what he sees or does then. And also I think his pathology doesn't leave him open. I do think he's the only change he makes is when people are kind to him because he's a narcissist and he doesn't respond to criticism or anything like that. There's no reason Obama during the birther situation should have invited him to the White House.
Right.
That wasn't on him and he could go fuck himself. But if he did and he just said, hey, I love The Apprentice and just wanted to say hi, he would have changed. You know, he would have left there and been, yeah, he's a nice guy, you know, and he's from Hawaii, and you know, and he would have never run for president. Now, there's no reason for Obama to have done that or have known to do that or, you know, but it's just the truth. You know, that's the pathology, I believe, you know, but I also just think like when we say nasty things to people who are clearly just powerless, it doesn't change them, you know, but this is what I've learned from my show. Facts and polls and numbers don't change people's minds. They dig in deeper, but feelings change people. So that's where I'm at right now. You know, I interviewed this guy, Father Greg, who started Homeboy Industries, and he said, if you don't make friends with your wounds, if you don't make friends with your wounds, then you'll be tempted to despise the wounded. You know, so like all these things are just kind of simmering in my head and blowing my mind a little and stuff. And I'm just trying to put it into practice, but it doesn't mean I won't still be sometimes cunty on the internet. And also, I think there's a difference when you're speaking truth to power. You know, to the wealth addicts, to the people who have power and are using it to fill this unfillable hole of like wealth addiction on the backs of the citizens.
On the backs of people like Jeremy, if we didn't have so many people who are addicted to wealth in this country, Jeremy maybe would have had, if we were a sane country, we would have socialized medicine. We would have Medicare and healthcare for all, as they do in Norway, which no one seems to be anxious to leave for the United States. There wouldn't be so many people who are in so much pain in the first place. Okay, we're a long way from four-year-olds putting things in their butts.
Sorry, I know.
No, that's not your fault. I wanted to talk about this. So,
but are we? Are we really?
Donald Trump is just kind of a giant four-year-old who stuck the White House in his butt. What do we do? What's your advice for this woman with this problem with this kid? If you had to, if it was a friend of yours, my four-year-old sticking things in the butt, what do I say?
Well, I think because of where her husband and she, how they were raised and how they're trying to like counter that, they're not realizing that it's okay. They tell him not to put Legos in his mouth, I'm sure. You know, he's four. You shouldn't be putting anything in your orifices when you're four. That needs to be regulated by your parents. And there's no shame in saying, don't put that Lego in your mouth.
Right.
And so if they say, don't put that in your butt, there's no shame in that either. They just don't put shame around it.
Exactly. You've taken the words right out of my mouth. You know, one day your son, Caller, is going to grow up and, you know, oral sex comes standard these days for the most part, probably going to use his mouth to perform oral sex. And yet as a parent of a four-year-old, how many times have you yanked something out of your four-year-old's mouth and said, no, you don't put golf balls in your mouth. You don't put dirt from the floor in your mouth. You don't put turds from the cat you picked out of the cat litter box in your mouth. You say that all the time. And you have a right as a parent to say, you don't put things in your butt. He'll work out when he's 13, 14, or 15, or 16, or 17, or 18, or whatever. Or he meets the first girl, if he's straight when he grows up and wants to peg him, that he can put things in his butt again when the time comes. For other reasons, but right now, you should say, without feeling like you're outing yourself as a terrible non-sex positive parent. If I were in your shoes, I think I was a pretty sex positive parent, I would say, don't put things in your butt. It's dangerous.
Yeah. Or even just the juices from your butt or your vagina, and then you touch your, you know, like my niece when she was little was always, you know, like all little girls digging into her vagina, digging. And all my nieces had glasses before they were even two. And my sister was so worried about shaming her. And finally she said, sweetie, it's okay to do that, but it's private, you know? And also I worry because if you are in, put your fingers in your vagina and then you touch your glasses, I don't want you to get an infection in your eye. And so then a few days later, she saw her digging in her vagina again. And she said, sweetie, remember what I told you? And she said, my niece said, no, this hand is for my vagina and this hand is for my glasses. And my sister was like, okay, that makes sense. I think because they so healthily unlearned the survival skills they had, you know, that were maybe fucked up as children, and they're now in a healthy place. And now they've gone not overboard, but that emphatic like unlearning of their own damage has made them now.
You can overcorrect.
Come from the other side.
On sex, even on sex positivity, sex negativity, you can overcorrect. You have to find that balance.
Yeah. There doesn't have to be shame in telling your kid, don't put a Legos in your butt or whatever. Just like you say with your mouth, like as simple as that.
Sarah Silverman, thank you so much for jumping on the phone. Everybody out there who can hear my voice, you have to check out I Love You America, Sarah's new talk show. Not late night. You can watch it anytime, her new talk show on Hulu. Sarah Silverman, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I adore you.
Hey, micro listener, did you like that? Yeah, you did. Do you want some more? Yeah, you do. Dan and Sarah, they took two more calls and they kept on chatting on the Magnum version of the show, which you can get over at www.savagelovecast.com. The Magnum is twice as long as the Micro, and there's no ads to listen to, so there is that. And also, you could try it for 1 month for $5, and then you can listen to every single Magnum that we've ever produced. And we've been doing this for years, since April of 2013, so there's a ton more content that you can explore. And if after binging on all that content, you've had your fill of Dan Savage, then you can just stop. Or you can keep going and subscribe for 6 months or a year, or you could give it as a gift. No one's holding a gun to your head, just saying. Okay, back to the show.
Hi, Dan and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I could really use some help. I've been with my husband now for almost 8 years, and during that whole time, he has been so kind about the fact that I hate getting blowjobs. It's actually gone so far as I feel guilty accepting oral sex on me because I know that I don't want to reciprocate. I think it all stems from my first relationship where I felt very pressured and my boyfriend was not a big fan of the word no, but that is the exact opposite of the relationship I'm in right now. So what I would love to know is what can my husband and I do together to get me to enjoy giving blowjobs? My husband's got good hygiene. He never pressures me, does everything right that we can think of. Just if you could give us some more ideas of what I could do or we could do together, I would really appreciate it.
I'm really sorry that your previous boyfriend was so rapey. You describe it as not a big fan of the word no. That seems pretty rapey to me. That said, there are people out there who didn't have rapey boyfriends or experiences of sexual trauma or assault who don't like giving blowjobs. Some people just don't like giving head, and that is fine. I have said in the past that oral comes standard. Any model that arrives without oral should be immediately returned to the lot, and that's a generally applicable rule. But we are allowed to have our preferences, and we're allowed to opt out of certain things if we don't enjoy them. And we may find ourselves with partners who enjoy the thing that we don't enjoy and will do that thing for us that we don't necessarily want to do for them. And that's also fine if your partner is content. If that's a price of admission your partner is willing to pay to be with you, then you allow your partner to pay that price. But that's not what you were looking for. You weren't looking for absolution or the get out of blowjobs free card. You were asking me to how to get there. How can you learn to like blowjobs? The first thing to let go of is the idea if you put a dick in your mouth, it stays there until that person comes. Giving someone head is often arduous work. It's a blow job, not a blow party for that reason. It takes sustained effort and focus. And it can be intimidating to look at that dick and think, okay, if I put that in my mouth, if I initiate a blowjob, I'm in for 10, 15, 20 minutes of having my face fucked. Do I want that? And some people, because they don't want to go the distance, won't even do a little oral foreplay. But you can, instead of thinking of doing blowjobs, do some things that are blowjob adjacent. You can have some oral foreplay. You can nuzzle. You can take baby steps toward putting that dick in your mouth if indeed you ever want that dick in your mouth. And maybe you don't, and it might be because of your experience with your rapey ex-boyfriend, or it may be independent of that. Maybe you just don't want to do this and it'll never work for you. There are a couple things that don't work for me that I don't want to do. And it's fine for you to have a couple things that don't work for you that you don't want to do. But if you want to get there, please don't go the chocolate saucer out. Please don't go get some whipped cream. Dump whipped cream on somebody's body. Looks good for a second, tastes decent for 30 seconds, and 2 minutes later it smells like some baby barfed all over your partner's crotch. Don't do it. Don't do whipped cream. Don't do chocolate sauce. Oh my God, it just looks like a scat scene if you look at pictures of it afterwards. Don't do it. Dessert is for after, not during. But go down there. Lick, nuzzle, suck a little bit. Incorporate masturbation, incorporating him masturbating himself while you're darting around down there with your tongue out and looking him in the face. If you're worried about feeling dehumanized or used, sustaining eye contact during oral is a good way to snap that association. You're still a human being. He still sees you. You're not just a sensation. And make it, instead of a blowjob, oral enhanced masturbation, where you're jerking him off with a little oral here and there, or he's jerking himself off with a little oral nuzzling here and there from you, courtesy of you. And that really is, when you watch the best blowjobs go down, it's often a combo of hands and mouth. It's often a hand blowjob, blow hand job together. It's an amalgam, not a one or the other. And taking the pressure off your mouth, your throat, your gag reflex by pivoting to and incorporating your right hand or your left hand or his right hand can make that blowjob seem less like work, less intimidating, and perhaps a lot less like the blowjobs your rapey ex-boyfriend forced you to give.
Hi, Dan. This is regarding your comments on Mia Love on episode 586. I am a fellow Haitian American, and I want to thank you so much for calling Mia out on her bullshit. You will not believe the amount of Haitians in this country support Donald Trump. And now that he's attacking them specifically, they want to speak up against them. Mia Love, keep all your Trump-loving, Republican-loving self. Keep all that stuff. We don't need her to comment for us at all.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about the woman whose boyfriend used her vibrator and jacked off on her mirror and his poly and sent the video to his other girlfriends. He just sounds inconsiderate. And I don't mean to be sex shaming him. I think it's fine for him to be sending videos to his other girlfriend. He disclosed he's poly, but they've had a conversation about how this woman is like was uncomfortable about seeing photos on Facebook of him with other women. So why would he think it's a good idea to use her vibrator, jack off on her belongings, and send that video to his other girlfriends? Like, go to a public bathroom and send a video there. Like, can you make it less obvious?
Don't ever recommend The Sound of Music as a movie to watch ever again. It is a horrible, horrible movie that is way too long because they keep singing the same songs over and over again. It's the only film I want the Nazis to win. They're behind the tombstones. Go get them.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. You can also record your own audio if you want to email us a question. Record your own audio and email it to voicemail@savagelovecast.com. If you like my political-ish rants at the top of this show, you should also be listening to Blabbermouth, where me and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Eli Sanders and snot-nosed millennial brat Rich Smith, who I like very much, I'm just teasing, we talk about the news of the week every week on Blabbermouth. Find it where you find your podcasts.
Follow me on Twitter @FakeDanSavage. Follow Sarah Silverman on Twitter @SarahKSilverman.
The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. I'll be back at you next week with an installment of Savage Lovecast. Thanks for coming.